going to see today if we can prepare ourselves for the God experience by releasing some of the concepts that have been standing in the way. Some of these concepts we don't even know we have, but we accept the world concepts unknowingly, and then lo and behold, our lives are showing forth some kind of discord, and we know we've been good, we've been dedicated, we've been loving and devoted, we've been doing all the things we're supposed to do to our knowledge, but there is this monstrosity that we can't remove for some reason or other. We want to see that when we are not accepting God's presence, we are really rejecting God's presence. And so the moment that you cease to accept, in that moment you unconsciously reject. And so rejecting God's presence becomes the basic cause of every form of discord that appears in our life. That rejection, by not consciously accepting, must be stopped. Now, we have all looked at form and said, this is a handsome form, this is not. But we have to go a step further now and face a few facts that are very disturbing. Facts that we are more apt to really want to ignore because we don't want to face them. We don't want to be forced to make a change in ourselves. And so we find ourselves doing a very weird thing. We're really trying to change God instead of ourselves. We're trying to remake God in our own image, according to our own concepts and beliefs, according to our own purposes. We can't do it. We might as well stand and face the fact that God is never going to be in a human form. You can look around this world at the people who consider themselves old. They have old and tired bodies. They are suffering. They are in pain. Now ask yourself, if God is in an old, tired body, you'll see that God is not in such a body. And then you can look at that body when it wasn't old and tired and ask yourself if God was in that one. And if so, did God walk out? Or was God never in that body in the first place? And then you find that all over the universe, the problem of old age is really quite different than we have recognized. It has nothing to do with lack and limitation. It has nothing to do with suffering. It has to do with the rejection of the truth about God. And in the rejection of the truth about God, that which is not under the law of God begins to show that it has no divine safety, no divine protection, no divine maintenance. And so we have what is probably one of the greatest diseases in the world, old age and suffering, infirmity, all kinds of health plans to cover it. And not one of those bodies was made by God. God isn't in one of those bodies. And as long as you think God is in a body, you are rejecting and insulting the truth about God. Certainly when there is a body that has a disease, you must know that God cannot be in that body. A million people die every year of cancer. Is God in that body? And you can go down the list. Now we must face this. God is not in the diseased body, in the aged body, or the infirm body. Neither is God in the newborn baby's body. God never leaves the body because God is never in the body. Now, God is not in any body on this earth. And that should give you a clue about the nature of the body. Once you face the fact, instead of ignoring it, and accept, God, I couldn't possibly try to encompass you within a mortal body. You're not in one. And therefore, if you live in the sense of body, knowing God is not in that body, you must see that that body cannot be under the law or protection or sustenance of God. And as long as you maintain the belief that that body, which God does not inhabit, is your body, then you can see that you're living outside of the kingdom of God. Now, this is a hard fact to face. God is not in my body, and therefore God is not sustaining this body. God is not in my friend's body, and God is not sustaining that body. I have a concept of body, and God is not in my concept at all. Now go back to your six-year-old body. At that time, you looked a certain way, and that was you, to your sense of things. And then you became 20 years old, and you had a new kind of body, a 20-year-old body. And then 40, and then 60, someday 85, 95. And what will your body be then? Which body is your body? You have a new body every day. Which one is yours? Are you that changing body? If you are the changing body, you are rejecting God, because God is not changing. And God is all. Now, very subtly then, you see that we have accepted a changing body as my body, while trying to accept the truth that God is all there is. The divine image does not change, but your concept changes all the time. Today's concept is not the same as the concept 10 years ago, and 10 years from now you'll have a new concept of yourself, and you'll say, this is me. Now, while you're doing that, take yourself at your present level, right where you are, and see this. I, for example, can look at you and see you one way. A six-year-old child can look at you and see you in a completely different way. A foreign person, someone who's not acquainted with your customs, your traditions, will look at you and see you in a completely different way. A person older than yourself will look at you and see you in a different way. And you yourself will see yourself in a different way than all of the other persons see you. Now, which one is you? You're always the same, but the baby sees you this way, the six-year-old sees you that way, the husband or wife sees you this way, the friend sees you that way, the employer or employee sees you another way. Which one are you? And you'll find that nobody sees you at all. Each is seeing its concept about you. And you are seeing your concept about yourself, and even that concept will change every day. And so you never really live in yourself. You live in your changing concept about yourself. And because of it, you find when you look at other people, you cannot really know them. Now look at someone you know and consider that you see them a certain way, but everyone else sees them another way. A six-year-old will see that person another way. A 20-year-old will see that person another way. Are you right and they are wrong? Each of you has a concept about that other person. And you, not being in yourself, you are really a concept forming a concept about a concept. And so we find that we are all moving in a very superficial surface existence, never finding the self, assuming things, letting facts go by and ignoring them, because it's much easier to do that than to stand still and realize God is not in that form I'm looking at, and therefore that which is not a God form cannot have reality. That form that I can go up to and punch in the eye, that form doesn't contain God. That form that a bomb can kill, that doesn't contain God. That form subject to the ills of this world does not contain God. The finite cannot contain the infinite. And so finally, you're willing to face the fact that that form which is not containing God does not contain life, because God is life. And as difficult it is for a person to come to this mountaintop where the forms before us do not contain life, that must be done. Until you do this, you're rejecting God, because you're accepting a second, a substitute. And the imagined form you see, and the imagined form that is looking at it, must live a dream existence. God is not in the form, and God is life. Life is not in the form of your neighbor. Life is not in the form of yourself. And in order to know life, you must come to a different place within yourself to realize reality. Now, a woman who is not even in this work told me about something and wanted me to explain it to her. She said that she had gone to the hairdresser, and that when sitting beneath the dryer, she suddenly found that she was in a strange state that she had never known about, and wondered about it. Could I tell her what it was? She said she wasn't thinking at all, and yet she wasn't herself. And so suddenly she had found this river of peace without knowing why or how, and it was very weird to her. Now, there is that level then in which you rise out of the thinking mind, which beholds form and accepts life in form, or God in form, and you begin to accept the reality of God from the level of the mind without concept. Now, without the mind that has no concept, you're always in the non-God universe, which isn't really a universe at all. It's an imagined multiverse of forms manufactured by the mind. We all have lived in this multiverse while we have sought the universe. Now let's get out of the concepts and see that only when the mind is completely free of concept do we know God aright. Now, the idea of relinquishing concept is very tricky. You want to, in some way, be there to know what you're doing, and that is going to make it necessary for you to be there in a form. So you can't do that. You have to lose the concept of form, the concept of me, the concept of God, the concept of everything. You have to yield yourself to the spirit of the universe. You have to de-individualize yourself. You have to lose the concept of place, of body, of time, of the world, of a room, a complete absence of concept. And if you stand in that absence of concept, you're on your way to accepting the allness of God. Now comes a very subtle awareness of a life that you could not possibly know when you were in the darkness of concept. As in a dark room where nothing is visible, no objects are delineated, nothing can be coming into your consciousness from that dark room, suddenly you put on the light and there are the objects, all clearly delineated. They were there all the time in the dark, but unseen. So it is that when you are in concept of any kind, you are in the dark. And all around you is the invisible activity of God. But your concept is the darkness, preventing you from seeing what is there in God. And then when you release concept and find your vacuum, the light illuminates that which had been dark, and the expression of God becomes an experience that always was possible, was always waiting for you, but your thought was in the way. This total eclipse of concept ends in the eclipse of me, the willingness from me to completely be removed from all thought. And in the absence of the concept of me, you find your river of peace beyond understanding, and there comes the awareness of a life called presence. It's palpable. It's right there beside you, maybe within you, but it's so close that you suddenly become aware of that which for you had been in the dark before, but now it lives. And you're realizing something far greater than your former human concept of self. In the presence of this spirit, all the freedoms that you had sought become instantly possible. Everything that you had asked for, everything you had hoped for and wanted, is now available through grace, because concept is no longer separating you from the flow of reality. This exercise of release from concept is not possible to one who will not face facts. It is really a temporary death, and without it, there is no reborning. It must be done frequently, 2-3 times a day. The constant repetition of this enables you to go out into the world with no prior belief, with no prior judgment, with no anticipation, with no concept. And you face the entire activity of the world around you with a perfectly clean blackboard, in which everything that happens bounces up against that which is not a concept, and so there's no conflict of any kind. And you find you're walking in God. You're walking in the kingdom of God because all that ever took you out of it was the activity of the thinking mind. All that ever made you a victim of the problems of the world was this invisible channel called mind, which you had forgotten to empty of concept. And these concepts became visible in your life, even though you weren't aware of having them. Now you're not making the mistake of any kind of judgment. You're not making the mistake of letting a concept live in you. All of yesterday is gone. Every memory of the past. You are living on the brink of now in God. You are not making the concepts anymore. God does the thinking. Now in this chapter, Joel is telling us there are three words, three levels of concept that clutter our lives and prevent the demonstration of Christ self. The concept we entertain of God and of prayer and of grace. You know, of course, that grace is always present. And while you are seeking things of this world, you are rejecting His grace. While you are outlining the way you would like things to be, you are rejecting His grace. While you are asking, you are rejecting His grace. While you are judging, you are rejecting His grace. Always, even though the grace of the Father is present and is operating, it can only enter into the experience of the Son of God. The grace can never enter into a person. And as long as you are in a form, in the concept of form, you are that person in whom grace cannot enter. Now, another way we limit our acceptance of grace is the belief that if we specify some desire, we are going correctly in the direction of fulfillment. This is what's wrong today, or that is what's wrong. And the moment you start to specify, you are asking God not to be God. You are again remaking God according to your idea of what God ought to be like. You are asking God to stop running a perfect universe for a moment and to divide Himself into various parts and just give you a little of something over here to take care of this momentary problem. Now you can't bring God into a finite problem. The moment you finitize, you lose God. And so we learn that the secret is not to try to have God do something in our lives according to our concept of how it ought to be done or how we would like it to be done. We do not make a hoop and say, God, come through the hoop. We do not outline. We do not request. We do not ask. We do not seek, and we do not knock. We do not acknowledge the claim of the problem as the world does. But rather we use the claim to alert us to the fact that we have momentarily accepted that God is withholding harmony, or that God is withholding health, or that God is withholding supply. We have made that acceptance unconsciously the moment we accepted the problem. And by accepting the problem, we were rejecting the presence of God. Now then, the beginning of your foundation of truth must always be the presence of God. There's no truth until you've accepted the presence of God. And once you've accepted the presence of God, then all that denies the presence must be removed from your concept. Now, where is God at this moment? Each of us, if we're in truth, are going to say, why, God is right here and everywhere. Now, if we will face that, God is right here and everywhere, what else is there for us to do? Can you run the universe better? Can you do anything better than God? Can you run this form better than God? Can you run the world or your business better than God? Can you do anything in the world that God cannot do better than you? And if you've accepted God being here, then consistency says, God being here, I will let God live God's life here where the world sees me. Now, we don't have to complicate our lives. We can merely accept that God being here, it is happening. It is. And we create the vacuum of concept so that all that is here now is God. You're sweeping out all that is not God from your belief until your belief is the inner assurance of God's presence. Now, what shall I pray for if God is here? The acknowledgement of God is my prayer. The acknowledgement of the presence is the only prayer necessary. And in the acknowledgement of the presence, you are accepting grace. Now, if you still have a lingering belief that a discord is present, then you really have not accepted that God is present. Because God cannot be in a cancerous body. If God is present, the cancerous body cannot be present. So we're coming to that high place where you're facing the facts, not ignoring them, and hoping for God to do something. Now, last year, 1 million people died of cancer. And you can be sure many of them believed that God was going to heal their cancer. And they were wrong. God didn't heal their cancer. And this year, 1 million will do the same. It's been that way for years. God isn't going to, as Joel said, start the rain or stop the rain. God isn't going to heal the sick body. God isn't going to do anything except what God is doing, run a perfect universe. And the only way you can live in it is to get out of the concept of an imperfect one, because there isn't any imperfect one around here. You're merely in the darkness without the light switch, and you cannot see what is here. But when you accept the presence of God, lo, I, in the midst of you, I make all things new. I am the light. I am the illumination. And I reveal myself to you then. And so we change our concept of prayer to the acceptance of the presence. And that means the rejection of the physical form. The first objection comes in, what am I going to do about it? That is one of the reasons why the Essenes were so important in history. Before you were in the inner council of the Essenes, you had to fulfill a very strange requirement. Something so strange that even now, knowing God is not in the form, we wonder, how can we do it? You have to leave your body with a friend and go away for 3 days without it. I don't mean sit in a corner and meditate. You left your physical body with a friend for 3 days, and your friends took care of it. And when you had passed that three-day initiation, you were in the High Council of the Essenes. When Jesus said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up again," that was child's play for him. He'd been doing it for years, just as the other Essenes had. When Mary took the child in the early days down to Egypt, there were invisible Essenes appearing to help all along the way. All through the expression of the first beginnings of a church after crucifixion, when Jesus had gone, the Essenes were helping the early martyrs. You can read all books about the Essenes, and you'll never find the truth in those books about them, because the truth about them was the invisible nature of their being. And you'll find that all of the writers of books could only see the physical facts. They could merely report these were a strange people. They were celibates. They adopted children. They ate these things and they dressed this way. And they were usually very quiet. But the inner initiations had created a community where the Spirit of God was the only being, the only presence, the only life that was honored. They had risen to a large degree above mental concept. They were able, therefore, to bring forth into expression the very background of spiritual energy which formed the beginning of the Holy Family, the Immaculate Conception, the activity of Jesus. All of this was born among this group. And the very core of their work was absent from the body and present with the Lord. Now, in its basic fundamental origin, Christianity was born among the Essenes. When you read the Bible today and wonder why the name Essene is not in the Bible even once, you will realize the tremendous effort that was put forth to keep that name out of the Bible by state politicians who literally stole a religion. They took Essenism, took its chief known master, Jesus Christ, called it Christianity, and then proceeded to water down the very teaching of Christianity that had come out of Essenism, and which is still the complete New Testament. For there wasn't a thing in Essenism that Jesus liked that he didn't take and use and teach and practice and demonstrate. And when you read the New Testament, you're really looking at the Essenic religion, which the state completely absorbed and called Christianity without understanding the nature of it. And so the world has been practicing the Essenic religion without the core of it, which is absent from the body and present with the Lord. Spirit is your name. Spirit always was your name. And for 1500 years the illusion of form has persisted on the earth because the state had no knowledge of what Jesus was teaching at all. Now in this form, which he had overcome, this body image in time and in space, we find all of our problems. And the moment you overcome the sense of body and are in the true body, you discover that old age is as much an illusion as anything could be. There never was an old person in the whole universe. There never was an old body. There never was an old age problem of any kind. There was a universal mesmerism about it. And then we find that millions and millions and millions of old, tired, suffering bodies never were formed by God. And their only problem was that at one point in their demonstration, they didn't know anything about evolving spiritually. And as a consequence, they walked away from the spiritual law of being, that God is the presence, the law, the principle, the life, the energy, the perfection of being. You will discover that when you have applied the acceptance of God without a physical form, that you will come to this level above the mind where you're not thinking and yet you're aware and alert in a different kind of alertness, where the whole universe is humming in its quietness. And there you stand, living in the kingdom of God on earth, and you're not a body, you're not an age, you're not a sex, you're not a person, you're a living infinite consciousness. And that which you externalize is going to be shaped in the divine image and likeness of truth. Out of the body is also out of the world. And because the Father did not create this world, as long as you're in the physical form, you're going to be in the world that is not divinely created. Every material form is in a material universe. If I remember correctly, in Thunder of Silence, page 103, 102 and 103, the ninth chapter that we were all supposed to read many times. This is a spiritual universe. There is no such thing as a material body. There is no such thing as a material universe. We cannot ignore this truth. If there is no material body, you have none. If there is no material universe, you're not living in one. And until you lift the cloud of belief that says you are in a material body, you are in a material universe, you're in a concept which is rejecting the grace of God that is present where God is, right where you stand. And so Joel tells us our concept about God, our concept about prayer, our concept about grace must be lifted to know that there's no presence beside God. There's no activity beside grace. There's no body beside a spiritual body. In the third proverb, we have a beautiful teaching about how to abide in the knowledge that God's presence is the only presence where you are, that you are not in a physical form, but God's presence is where you are, and that the grace of God is functioning where that presence is, and that there's nothing to pray for. There is only the quiet inner acknowledgement that here is God. And so in this proverb, we're told, the fifth or sixth verse, Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. Now, isn't that what Joel is telling us about have no concept? Remove your concept means lean not unto thine own understanding. And then you're not stuck with a mind that's wiggling around trying to figure it out. You might say, if you wanted to know the time of the day, and if you were consistent the way we are about God, why, we would look at a watch and say, no, I don't want to know the time from that watch until I understand how that watch works. I've got to take it apart first and look in every little crevice, and then after I understand it, then I want to know the time. Now, if you did that every time you wanted to know the time, you'd never know the time. And if you want to understand God, it's like trying to take a watch apart before it tells you the time. God isn't to be understood, but to be accepted. Who is going to understand God? Do you see the supreme ego of wanting to understand God? Who is there to understand God if God is all? It's the yielding of the belief that my finite mind can understand God. Lean not unto thine own understanding, but trust in God in all thy ways. Do you see how we who try to be giants, when the little pygmy mind cannot understand God, it's an impossibility. And we waste all of these years trying to understand that which is not understandable, and which we are told again and again is not understandable. I cannot behold infinity, but I can divest myself of every concept and let infinity flow through. So the illuminated are not trying to understand God at all. They're letting God understand God. They are removing the barrier of the human mind that wants to understand the infinite. Tuning to the infinite isn't understanding it. It's making yourself a channel for it until the channel is dissolved and you find I am it. And so if you're still mentalizing God, trying to understand God, this very simple verse is being rejected. And if this is the word of God, by rejecting God's word, leaning on thine own understanding, the only one you're hurting is your false sense of self. There are many things in this proverb which, though simple, have been overlooked and thence rejected by our ignorance of them. In all thy ways acknowledge him. Now, it's awfully hard to acknowledge him and a problem. And the mind will persist and say, if I don't acknowledge the problem, how will it get fixed up? How will it get repaired? When you acknowledge him, you're acknowledging that there's no problem. Do you see that the problem occurs to the person in the form? That the first error has to lead to every other error? That the mind cannot remove the form. The mind has placed it there. The mind cannot solve the illusion of form. And to try with the human mind to figure out how I can appear in a form when I'm not in one is another way of rejecting the words of wisdom of the Father, which says, lean not on thine own understanding. Trust, acknowledge, abide, rest. And until you come to the place where you're willing to trust, acknowledge, lean not on your own, but abide in the realization that God is here. Acknowledge him in all thy ways. He will not and cannot direct thy path, because the Spirit can only function in itself, not in a person, not in a human form. And it's good to find out that as long as your mind is on the things of the world, you're rejecting God. You simply can't go on rejecting God under the illusion that you're going to find God, because you won't. God made no thing, and everything you're seeking is an image in mind. You cannot seek things and expect God to help you find them, because you are finitizing God. You're bringing God down to assisting you in a material venture, and there is no material thing. Now, we're all going to turn out of this material universe, this material body, and we're going to find that, like Mary's father and mother, they didn't live in a little hut. They had a rather large estate. And yet they lived among the Essenes. They lived in the knowledge that one doesn't live in a body. They weren't lacking for the things that we call important in this world. Mary wasn't lacking for the things in this world. But she wasn't seeking the things in this world. She was living in God. And the reward was quite momentous. Out of all of that, out of this community that knew the infinite invisible universe, came a great impulse which now taught that if you learn to live out of the form, out of concept, out of the belief that God is in physical forms, then the Spirit of God will direct your paths and you will bear fruit richly. And the complete demonstration of Jesus Christ was how this fruitage appears in your life when you're not living in a form. When you're willing to stand and face the forms of the world, including your own, and not judge them from the temporary concept in which you happen to be, so that you're not in the changing concept of a world, but you're on the solid ground of the unchanging Spirit, standing still while the forms change around you, not seeking the forms that are quicksilver, but resting in the knowledge that here God is living, and there's nothing to do but know that whatever I am doing now and wherever I may be, here God is living. Acknowledge him in all thy ways, and he will direct thy path. And if you think you can make an exception, it catches you real quickly. Be not wise in thine own eyes. And then a line that I think is very important to all of us. Honor the Lord with thy substance. Now that's a telltale line. Honor the Lord with thy substance. That's the 8th verse. And a person could take that and walk through into reality. Honor the Lord with thy substance. Not with your mind, not with your concepts, but with thy substance. Thy substance is the substance of God. And unless you're constantly aware of that, You're always accepting problems. And when you're accepting problems, you're saying, my substance is not the substance of God. So you see, today's class is establishing a foundation. An integrity that will face a fact that I am or I am not the substance of God. God is or God is not here. The problem is or is not here. What do I believe? For without the belief in truth, what else can I externalize but the untruth? The greatest sacrifice that Jesus made is quite different than we have thought. He lived not in the form. And it was impervious to all evil. In order to be crucified, he had to come back into a form. He had to release his belief in truth, his knowledge of truth, and come into the lie. That was his sacrifice. He had to remove the belief, the knowledge that he's not in form, and momentarily believe that he was in a form. That was the only way he could demonstrate what was happening in the world mind. It was crucifying truth, reality, Christ. But it couldn't crucify him because he knew his self was not in form. The only way he could show the crucifixion visibly was to begin accepting himself in form. That was his real sacrifice. It is only then that he began to doubt and say, Father, lift this cup. Why hast thou forsaken me? Because he was now coming into humanhood again for the sake of revealing the externalized crucifixion of Christ that was taking place in the world consciousness. It wasn't long, and then the Spirit took over again. We would never have known that the world consciousness is externalizing as the crucifixion unless he had permitted it. We must reverse that. We are that world consciousness which is crucifying Christ every day in ourselves. And only by rising above that crucifixion, which knows not the Christ, by externalizing only the truth of being, will we rise. We do that then as he did. The crucifixion, the resurrection, the ascension are all in that consciousness which accepts only the presence of God. This becomes our internal crucifixion, our internal resurrection, our internal ascension. We do it for the world, for our neighbor, for everyone we know. We do not accept that God is in their form. We release God from the belief that God is in their form. And we find that we are being reborn to a new understanding of who they are. Once the form is out of concept, this invisible, palpable presence begins to reveal to you who is there. You're out of the multiverse. You're in the universe. You are unified into a one presence. Now form, no form contains God. God is not the tree. God is not the flower. God is not the animal. Everything is seen to be a mental image. And these thought images are your concepts. When you are free of these concepts, of the thought images about form, then you discover the form of which God is the substance. because you're discovering spiritual form. The mental images are gone. And these new spiritual forms are not capable in any way of bringing a problem to your door. They are all that is present. And there is no discord between them and yourself. When you start peopling this universe with the invisible spiritual forms, you'll find you're out of the concept of matter, and you can rest with the assurance that grace is the only law that is functioning your being. Then you're living and honoring God with your substance. When John says that we are to abide that we must abide in the Christ and let the Christ abide in us, his gospel is giving us the secret of rising out of the concept world, out of the world in which forms become old, into the universe where form is ever the perfect image and likeness, where old age is not even heard of, where there is no corruption of the flesh, where the law is the perfection of divine being. And that universe is here. When you are lifted from the darkness of concept, illuminated by the light of your own true being, your own substance. This is hard work. This takes a great deal of effort. It takes understanding that wants to live in the silence which opens the door to reality. While you're doing it, you are following the path of the prophets. You are becoming an Israelite. You are returning to that religion which was the religion of Jesus Christ, the religion of knowing the presence of God, and never letting go, so that you are in an unbroken consciousness, one with that presence, uninterrupted, living 24 hours a day in the unbroken consciousness of truth. Facing every problem that arises with the knowledge that God is not in the problem. That which God has not ordained can never be real. But God is your being. And silence alone, the silence which is devoid of concept, releases you from the false universe. Someday we're going to take our initiation and we'll find ourselves walking, not in a body, but not because of any mental effort on our own part, but rather because we have dismissed the concepts of that mind which was not of the Father. And in the void, we will be lifted. We'll find the reality of the angels. We'll find ourselves moving in a new land where light, instead of physical form, is the only reality. We will see that there are no conditions in that light, that we are free in that light, that we are not confined or limited or lacking. We are not subject to decay. We have no place where we end or begin. We are the living consciousness of God. We're finding our substance. In this world, we have sought things in space, in time, in matter, in form. And these are the things of the world. As long as you continue to seek these things in time, space, matter, and form, you're rejecting God. Literally, rejecting God. Where shall you go if you cannot seek things in time, space, matter, and form? You must reach the place where you realize that there has to be a change in your way of seeking things. That isn't the God way. That's the human way. And the human way can never receive the things of God. Every avenue in this world is cut off to one who really wants the things of God. You cannot seek them in this world. And as long as you continue to, you are rejecting the enduring reality of being. There's only one place to seek them, and it's not in human dimensions.